Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast, brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me here at Starbucks in Higashi Ginza is Jim Allen.
Amazing, isn't it? This is the 33rd show we've done, and the first time we've ever been in the same room.
Together during the show.
I mean, exactly. We're in the same room all the time, it seems like, in jail in Higashi Ginza.
Well, they let us out. We are out on the town.
We're
having a good time.
Doing the show. We've got the caffeine and the hydration going, so let's get to it.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the players who are going to be posted. Right. We're going to talk about the MVPs. So let's get started by clearing the bases.
Okay, well, we have, as you know, as soon as the Japan Series ends, it's open season for the free agents and the poster boys, and we're going to hop to it. We've had, you know, we've been hearing questions, who's coming, and obviously the big name that everybody wants to hear, everyone's waiting to hear in the U.S. is... I think it's Takayuki Shinohara. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not me. It's you.
It's you, Darvish. You, Darvish. We're just joking about Shinohara. He's a fine individual, and he was a quality pitcher for a few years, and he is now a free agent, or he's on his way to becoming a free agent, but I don't think anybody's on anybody's radar.
Right.
But we said the same thing about the fellow Mr. Okajima.
That's right.
The Red Sox. When,
that's right.
The two Red Sox scouts who are also following you, Darvish, told people that they were there to see Okajima. People laughed, and in fact, they were straight up in front, which is quite rare for scouts to say, "Yeah, we love his drop curve, and we think he'll be good in the bullpen." And they said, well, we don't have any interest in Matsuzaka, which is more typical scout behavior.
Right.
So anyway, the guy that everybody's waiting for is Yu Darvish, and nobody really knows whether Yu Darvish is going to post or not. The fighters have said they would consider it. It's not really in the fighters' best interest to post him this year.
Because they could definitely use him next year, especially because I think they're going to be able to compete just as they did this year, although SoftBank's going to be just as good next year. But the fighters should be able to compete with the Yu Darvish. Without him, I'm not sure what they are.
Right. Yeah, he's obviously one of the best pitchers. I think he is the best pitcher in Japan. He did not have, in my opinion, the best season this year. But I think there's no doubt that in terms of command and quality of his stuff, he doesn't have the... The comparison here is with Masahiro Tanaka of the Rakuten Eagles, who is the best pitcher in Japan. And I think that talking to some of the players, everyone seems to say, the best pitch in Japan is Tanaka's slider. But that Yu Darvish has such an arsenal of quality pitches. He's got A-, he's got a lot of borderline, he's got a couple of borderline plus pitches with his four-seamer and his two-seamer, and his slider. So... his slider's not a plus pitch, really, but the whole package is very similar to what Matsuzaka brought. Plus, Daisuke Matsuzaka brought to the Red Sox. Plus, he's very tough, and he's very flexible, and he seems to be a smart guy.
He's got better command, you know, on all of his pitches than Matsuzaka had, in my opinion. I actually talked to Cleveland scout Dave DeFreitas during the week about what teams look for in free agents, and he touched on a number of issues. And since we have so many guys who are on the verge of making a jump to the bigs.
Yeah, amazing this year.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about it, so let's check out the interview. All right, I'm here with Cleveland Indians Pacific Rim Scouting Supervisor Dave DeFreitas. Thanks a lot for taking the time to join us, buddy. I know you're busy.
Oh, no problem.
Now, this year we've got, seems like we have the largest number of pitchers and position players that I've seen who are international free agents or can be posted. The list is led by Yu Darvish of Nippon Ham. We've got Tsuyoshi Wada of SoftBank, Hisashi Iwakuma of Rakuten, Chen Wei-Ying of Chunichi. Then we have position players Norichika Aoki of Yakult and Hiroyuki Nakajima of Seibu. What are some of the things that you guys as scouts look for in a guy's mental makeup? For example, when foreign players come to Japan, they look for certain qualities in players. What do you guys look for?
Well, a big one is mental toughness, you know. I mean... being able to make adjustments. It's not, I mean, it's a big leap baseball-wise going from NPB to MLB.
Definitely.
But, you know, and then you add the culture on top of that, and for these guys that probably have never lived overseas before, and have not had a lot of exposure to American culture, it's a trying move, you know, it's not easy. So that mental toughness plays a big role.
Now, how do you go about, you know, scouting that aspect? I mean, that's gotta be hard to look at. It's not in the numbers.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way the guys carry themselves, the way they, react in certain situations, and also just word of mouth, you know, trying to talk to people that are close to them or that know them, and, you know, do whatever we can to try and put all that together.
All right. Obviously, Yu Darvish is gaining a lot of attention. A lot of drool everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, what are the pluses of signing a Japanese pitcher?
I don't know. I mean, some people will, you know, argue that it opens up the market for a certain team, but I mean, that might have been the case 5-10 years ago. I don't know if it is now, though. Yeah, I think, you bring over a player because you think he's going to have an impact with your club, not because of where he's from, you know. So it's, you know, Darvish is a great pitcher. I think, you know, he'd have an impact for pretty much anybody, over there in the big leagues. So it's, you know, it's more need-based. It's not necessarily, this guy's Japanese, so we got to go get him and pay more for him. It's just, he's going to be able to get guys out.
Well, what about the quality of the league? I mean, you know, it looks like Japan has gained a lot more respect worldwide, even in the past 10, 15 years with the quality of baseball that's been played here. And part of that is because of the pitching.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been over here for that long, so I can't really speak to what it was like 15 years ago. But I can tell you that the amount of scouting that's gone on over here has dramatically increased over the last 5 years. So it might just be that now people are paying more attention to it. I mean, you kind of have to, you look at the pro leagues around the world and, you know, you'd say, you know, maybe the majors number one and then, NPB is second to that. And, you know, it's second because of the players, not just because of the location of the league.
And it seems like most of the, I mean, you know, obviously Hideo Nomo spawned a lot of look at pitchers in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But, it seems like the focus has been much more on the pitchers than the position players.
Yeah.
Any particular reason why?
Well, I'm not sure. The style of play is a little bit different. And, I mean, there have been guys that could hit that came out of here. I mean, you look at, obviously, looking at Matsui and Ichiro. Those are the two main guys. But some other ones that went over, you know.
Shinjo and...
Shinjo was okay. Kaz Matsui was okay once he got out of New York. You know, and Taguchi was a good role player, and Fukudome did a great job for us. I think just the training regimes, the style of hitting, maybe, you know, strength is a factor. It all kind of boils down to just the style of play makes a difference.
Now, Daisuke Matsuzaka has basically been a bust the past couple of seasons for the Boston Red Sox, but it seems like teams still like the talent pool here in Japan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's, you know, just because maybe one guy has a couple bad seasons doesn't mean you're going to overlook other guys that can play, you know?
And so you guys try to evaluate, you know, each player on his own merits and not look at, you know, how much maybe a Boston Red Sox team spent to get a posted player or get a player through the
posting
system.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't scout based on that. Obviously, when you're going to spend that much money, it factors in because, you know, you have to look at the past and how guys have reacted in order to try and make an accurate evaluation.
Now, what about getting a position player? I mean, Tsuyoshi Nishioka had his struggles last season with the Minnesota Twins. And we have two guys who, you know, we're not sure if they're going to be available, if they're going to go or not. It looks like they're going to go. What about getting a position player like this from Japan?
Are you asking about Nishioka or?
No. Just asking, you know, now we've got a couple guys who are on the list possibly to go over. And, you know, what is it like when you get a position player who you have to actually communicate with a little bit more than a pitcher who you can basically leave out there and, you know, have a meeting before the game, but then leave out there and to take care of business?
Well, I mean, communication is always key. It doesn't matter what position you're at, or what your role is with the team. you know, just each guy, like, yeah, they may be similar, but each guy's, you know, going to be different in his own respect. And, you know, you have to, if you're going to scout a guy, you have to look at what he's able to do and how that's going to fit with the rest of your club, because, you know, he's not going to go over there and be the only guy playing. So he's going to, where he's going to fit with your organization is a key thing you have to evaluate.
Now, what are some of the things you you guys look for in a position player?
Well, again, it's very player specific, but, you know, the mental toughness, the ability to go out there and play every day, and, you know, the tools package that a guy has, and, you know, how that's going to help your club.
I know basically, like, guys like Fukudome, they hit a bunch of home runs here, but do teams want to get a specific player, like a corner infielder, or do they look for an outfielder, or are they just looking for the best available athlete?
Well, you're looking to fill the holes that you've got with your club, you know, and, you're always looking for the best available player. That's not necessarily the best athlete all the time, but it's all dependent on the needs of your club.
All right, well, I know you guys are going to have a busy off season.
Yeah, we've already started a little bit there, but that's, you know, I have nothing to do with that. Those guys up above me are the ones that are taking care of that stuff.
Well, particularly, I mean, you know, trying to deal with, I mean, obviously a lot of teams interested in some of these Japanese players, probably including yours, so I'm sure you're busy with that, but we appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. It's always fun to talk about some baseball.
And, next time we'll talk about the players who were drafted here, because I know you get to look at a lot of young players here, so we'll talk about the draft that went down in October. It seems like ages ago that the thing happened, huh?
Yeah, I just saw that, Sugano turned down the Fighters, is that right?
I think I just saw that on the internet just before we opened up and started chatting. Yeah, it looks like he's going to tell them to take the high one.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a big decision for a guy like that, 22 years old, you know, it's a key developmental year making that transition. It's tough to take a year off.
Well, it looks like that's where he's headed. And I know you don't have much time off, so thanks for using some of it to chat with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
No worries. Look forward to it.
All right, bud.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take it easy.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dave, for joining us. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate it.
I know you don't have a lot of time, so I really appreciate you taking a few moments to talk to us. Now, my thing is with the temperament and the disposition and the teachability and consistency and stuff like maturity, those things are really important. And I think, and he seemed to make light of it, that the scouts, they want to know what the numbers are, but they also they want to know what kind of person they're bringing over, because that's such a major part of what's going to happen with the transition.
Right. Yeah, well, I think the transition is the key thing. Now, there's, when you look at what players do here and what players do, what Japanese players do in America, it's not exactly a straight line. You know, we can't say this guy had this numbers and he did well. But every player drops off. People say Ichiro didn't. His average was the same, but he lost other parts of his game. Every player drops off. Matsui lost a lot of his power. But he kept his on-base percentage, and he kept his average pretty high. Ichiro lost a lot of his, he lost almost all his home runs, almost all his walks, basically was stealing, you know, stolen bases, defenses, but outfield defense is going to translate really well.
Right, that's the one part of his game that didn't, you know, you didn't have to worry about it at all.
Right.
But I mean, it's just like, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, but the point is, everybody drops off, and nobody's going to translate, it's going to be the same pitcher, because the contexts are so radically different. But there are exceptions. Now, the question is, you get players like Kazuo Matsui, who should have been one of the great imports to America, and he might have, but for being in the wrong place at the wrong time, going to play in New York at a new position, and it did not suit him. The adjustments were harder for him to make than he thought, and the whole thing sort of collapsed, blew up in his face.
Yeah, and that's something that Dave pointed out. He said once Matsui got out of New York, he was a better player.
Sure. Had he started in Kansas City or someplace, you know, Minnesota or something, I think he could have been and avoided injuries, which have dogged him really in the last few years. He could have been a major league star. He could have been the next Ichiro. Because he was, to be honest, he was a better player than Ichiro was when they were both at their prime. I think Kazumasu was a little better player than Ichiro was.
And the other thing that they pointed out was players having to make adjustments and, you know, adjust what they do. And I think that's a big, I mean, we look at the way that the U.S. players or a lot of Dominican players now and Venezuelan players come over to Japan, and they have a lot of adjustments to make. I mean, it's a different game. It's a whole new ball game for them. And I think a player who's able to make those adjustments, and just like Dave said, he said, you talk to people, you ask around.
Right.
I think those are, you know, areas that are just as important as the numbers. And the numbers are the numbers. I think, you know, you have to look at the mechanics of anything. A guy's swing, a guy's throwing motion, all that stuff. And they evaluate all that stuff before they, you know, start salivating and drooling over these players. So Darvish really must be a jewel for the scouts to have reacted the way they have.
Well, I think, actually, oddly enough, usually because Japan, Japanese baseball is not low-level minor league baseball, where you have to look at the talent, you know, you have to look at the guy's swing because you really don't understand the context. It's so different from Major League. Well, you know, Dave said it is a big difference from Major League Baseball, but it's much closer than, let's say, rookie ball. The style of play will be similar in rookie ball, but the quality of the pitching is vastly different. The quality of hitting is vastly different. So basically, I think the process is you look at the numbers, you identify people who are candidates, and then you go from there, and players who are consistent, well, then we'll get closer and closer looks. And essentially, I think what happens is the people get weeded out based on their skills as opposed to selected based on their skills and then evaluated for their numbers. Then it works the other way. So, but as far as temperament goes, you know, the next guy was also a New York guy. I think two New York guys. I think the three biggest disappointments for Japanese players in America were the first was Hideki Arabe. This was a massive talent.
I would agree.
And there's no way that he should have been as inconsistent as he was with the pitches he had in the major leagues. Okay, the next guy, of course, was Kazuo Matsui, and the third was Keigawa. Now, Keigawa was a slip-up by the Yankees, and I've been told by the Red Sox people that they messed up. You know, they tried to change his form, they tried to do this, they tried to do that. But to be honest, if I was a scout and dealing with Keigawa, the first thing I would have noticed is how shy he is, and that, you know, it was probably his spirit, his makeup, he's a great guy and he's got a lot, he's a real fighter, but he wasn't a match for being in a New York pressure cooker when they're trying to change his pitching style.
Well, you know, for me, and I don't want to get into too much Keigawa stuff and get off track, but he never had it for me. I never liked his approach. I never liked the way he went after hitters. And when I did see him in the Nichibei Yaki, the U.S.-Japan games that they played, and I can't remember the year, but you know, he was so afraid to go at the hitters that he kept walking them, and you know, he walked one guy after another, and it was a pretty pathetic display then. And they should have known at that point. This is before anyone had said that they would take him. This is when he was still contemplating making the move. And I thought, well, you know, if he's going to pitch like this, he might as well just stay here. But to get back to our guys here, we're going to talk about making the move. Obviously, Darvish is one of the guys who is going to, you know, if he goes, well, we don't know if he's going to go yet. I've seen reports that his father said one thing one day and then another thing the next day. So
his brother?
His father.
His father, okay.
And so, but I think the things that are going to be tested are, you know, does he really hold runners on that well?
Right.
Is his breaking stuff that good? Is it going to keep the guys off of his hard stuff? The same goes for the other pitchers who are, you know, who we named. Iwakuma, Wada, and Chen, you know.
Well,
and
I think most of the questions with Darvish are going to be answered positives. And I think the question is, how does he hold runners? Is they're going to say, well, just pitch.
Just yeah, pitch. Don't
you
put him on.
Yeah, you just pitch the way you do, and you take care
on.
Of business, and you're going to be fine. Now, Iwakuma and Tsuyoshi Wada are very similar. Chen, you can speak more about Chen because you've you've had more time watching him. Iwakuma is essentially a ground ball pitcher, and Marty Brown, his former manager, said that when he's at his best, he's having guys making weak outs. And the problem is that he also, with his slider, he also misses a lot, slider and forkball, he often misses lots of bats. Now his problem has been when he misses bats, he occasionally starts to think that he should be striking people out. And then he starts going for strikeouts, and he starts trying to set up hitters instead of just pounding, you know, hitting low in and out of the zone. And he sends his pitch count through the roof, and then he gets into trouble. Okay. Wada's not really a similar... They are similar types of pitchers. They don't have overpowering... Neither of them have overpowering velocity. They both have great movement on the slider. They both have good, serviceable fastballs. I think they'll do fine in the majors, but the transition to a starting pitcher is something I don't think either of them are going to be really capable of handling, you know, in the sense it's going to make them frontline major league starting pitchers.
I'm curious about what you think about Wada, because he's another guy who I'm really not all that impressed with his stuff, but he continues to get guys out and keep them off balance. I'm just not sure he's going to be able to fight major league bats off of his hard stuff. Enough to, you know, with his breaking stuff.
Well, the other thing about Wada is, and the other thing is about the style of play, and I think this is something that I think we do have to go back to, is, you know, in just in the sense that, you know, you said that Egawa always had a problem faced with major league batters, that he was running away from them, is that faced with major league batters, what a lot of Japanese pitchers have success is getting them to chase their bad stuff, and these guys are good at it. Masanori Murakami, the first Japan's first ever major league player, said the reason he was better in the major leagues, and he set up all these wonderful expectations for his returning to Japan, was because the major league batters couldn't lay off his pitches out of the zone. he had some wicked movement, and they couldn't stay off him, and he was dynamite in the San Francisco Giants bullpen in the mid-60s. So I think Wada, Iwakuma to some extent, and Wada to a great extent, and with Wada, what you have is a guy who's really smart.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is intellectually on top of his game and who is good at making adjustments. He is very he is durable. He has had a few injuries, but he's been fairly consistent in terms of, you know, he's had two somewhat down seasons out of seven.
Right.
Out of nine. Iwakuma is about one out of three.
Well, I just, you know, I look at him, and maybe at his best I see him at a number four starter somewhere, and I can't even really imagine what team would go after him. I don't know. I mean, we've heard about Texas having a big interest in Darvish, and maybe if they don't get him, maybe they go after something like a Wada or a Chen. But neither one of those guys really impressed me. You know, other talks with other scouts, you know, Chen doesn't really throw hard enough. He throws pretty hard for a left-hander, but he doesn't throw all that hard overall.
Right.
So he's just going to have an average major league fastball, and is that going to be? Are his other pitches going to be enough to get him through? And so I don't know what these guys are. I look at them and I try to, you know, figure out how they're going to translate over or transfer over into the States, and I don't really know what to think of them. And then you know what I've said about the Tin Man Chen. Part of his makeup that I don't like is that in close games he tends to give up runs. At you know, at some point in the game, and it'd be interesting if he were on a team that scores regularly, what he would do, because maybe it would change his thought process around.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not going to get a lot of run support playing for the Dragons simply because of the park they play in. So
don't pick him up, San Diego.
Yeah, that might be the case. So you want to talk about the position players?
Yeah.
We did have one other pitcher.
We did. That's right. Some guy snuck in there. I guess maybe he's trying to slink away from Yokohama, or I don't know if he's serious or not.
Maybe he's got a mobile phone game bill with his new employers, and he's trying not to pay it, and so they're going to let him off the hook and get him off the Bay Stars payroll. And that's Hirooki Sanada, who was a golden rookie with the Giants and never really did anything with the Giants, was traded to the Bay Stars a few years back, and has been, he's been a useful middle reliever for the Bay Stars on occasion.
But I don't even remember that much where he was. I mean, you know, I think they used him in certain spots and they used him well, and you know, he was effective at times. I really don't remember. And so now I look at him as this mediocre guy who's a lot less effective than Yoshinori Tateyama, who went from the Fighters to the Texas Rangers and found limited success. But it's hard to see him on a big league roster.
I think just having the Japanese pitcher is a change up. You know, he's sort of like a change up out of the bullpen, because he's going to have a little different approach. And sometimes, you know, the major leagues are, you know, the funny thing is that one of the adjustments I think we're going to talk about in a second to the major league game is not trying to predict every single pitch. This is, there are major league guest hitters. You know, to some extent, everybody's a guest hitter. They have to adjust to where the pitchers are attacking them and where they think the batter is going to be focusing on. That's a main part of the game. But the fact is that in Japan, you see the same players over and over and over again. And if you haven't, your teammate has, and your friend on another team has, and the scouting reports are inches thick on every player you face, and the coaches will drill it into you. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And just hope he's right. The whole game is about predicting what your opponents are going to do. Well, in America, it's less about that. It's much more about reacting. And if you're reacting and you get a change up out of the bullpen, you get Sanada or somebody who has a different approach to the game, it can, even though you know he's there, it's like a good change up. Even though you know it's coming, it's still hard as heck to hit.
Yeah, well,
and I think this was part of the effectiveness of Yoshinori Tateyama last year, is that he doesn't have dynamite stuff. He's got good movement, he's got decent movement, decent location, but his stuff is not really all that difficult. He doesn't hide the ball well, but he had great effect coming in as one of the groups of relievers, and the guys are going, what is this stuff? By the time they were finished asking the question, they were out.
I mean, you know, you talk about preparation and in Japan, I remember talking to Tadahito Iguchi after he came back from the States and joined the Lotte Marines, and he said, in the States they hardly prepare at all, you know.
Well, you get 29 teams to play, you might be playing.
Right. Well, I mean, he called it non-preparation, and he says in Japan, you know, we get all this data and all these different scenarios on what these pitchers throw in certain situations, and he called that preparation. I'm like, you know, all that is just studying blindly for the bar exam.
Yep.
I mean, you just never know what the guy, and that's why a lot of times I see players, as they struck out and they're walking back to the dugout, they're looking up at the big screen, and the expression on their faces is, did this guy really throw me that pitch in that situation? Because, you know, they just looked at it, watched it go by for a strike, and then they're going to sit down. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know if it's good or bad, but...
Yeah. Well, anyway, when Marty Brown was managing the Carp, I think his principal struggle was trying to wean players off the feeling that they need to know what pitch is coming in what situation, and just prepare to hit, you know, hit in the spot, have a good approach, be prepared for this, and have plan A, plan B. And that was hard as heck, because the Japanese players are weaned on, you know, this situation. Okay.
All right, let's get to the position players now. Sure. Norichika Aoki of the Yakult Swallows now. You know, speed is his game, but I don't see him really as a center fielder in the big leagues, and he doesn't have power for a corner spot, and he doesn't really steal bases anymore. And, you know, what is he in the eyes of big league teams? Certainly not an Ichiro type of guy. I mean, what do they think? You know, are they really going to pay a posting fee and then put this guy in someplace in the outfield position?
I don't see that happening. No, he's stolen... he stole 8 bases this year.
Well, I don't think it's that he can't steal anymore. I think it's that they didn't need him to steal, or that wasn't his role with the Yakult Swallows so much.
Well, on the other hand, they were playing little ball all year, and it's really hard to say. And also,
your buddy Tanaka, never gotten that bad, right?
Pretty much. Well, didn't get an at bat, and then when he did get at bats, he didn't hit.
Yeah.
But no, he's stopped stealing bases. He was a big base stealer. I think to be honest that he's lost a fair amount of speed. He does not have he can cover as much ground as a major league center fielder. He does not have a major league center fielder's arm. His arm would be below average.
Below. Look out below.
Would it be the worst major league arm, but
I just can't see him in center.
Yeah, I can't see it either. And then what else?
Okay, so no, then he's no, not a power hitter, so why would you put him in a corner spot?
Well, you'd put him in a corner spot because he gets on base.
And that'd be left field then.
Okay, that would be left field. That's fine. Okay, what he would give you in left field is better range. He does have enough of an arm that he could probably have a very good arm for a left fielder, and he does get on base. And I think his style getting on base would really, really work. Actually, I think it would really, really work in the majors because he's a 380, 390 on OBP guy here with the Swallows. It's a good hitting park. It's a good hitting league. But let's say he's a 360 in the majors. Okay, that makes him, okay, he might be a number seven hitter. But that's a guy who, or wherever you put him, is a number two hitter maybe.
But why would you pay a posting fee and bring over a guy you're going to slot in the number seven hole in left field?
You need him. Maybe that's the guy you need. Maybe you're short on team speed. Maybe you're a little shot. You need an extra glove and you need a guy who gets on base. I mean, that's the answer.
All right. Next guy is Nakajima. Now, I imagine he would be moved to maybe second base. You know, I even thought maybe third, because he can hit for power.
And he has a decent arm.
And he has a good arm. I'm just not sure that his power is going to translate in the bigs, but I think it will because they throw a lot more fastballs and they pound strike zones so much that he's going to be able to
The other thing that he has going for him is that he's got great power to the opposite field.
Mm-hmm.
He hits away. He'll pull, if they pitch him inside, he can whack it, but he pretty much lives on the outside part of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to earn him a lot of meal money in the major leagues, I think.
Quite honestly, I'd like the Dodgers to grab him and put him at third base there. Or I could also see a team like Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
Good home run park. I mean, you put him at third base, you just leave him out there and forget about it. He's going to produce for you.
He could
daily.
Yeah, I'll tell you, hitting the gaps, he's still got great speed. He's also this guy is a very tough, he's not, okay, I love him, but he's not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Mm-hmm.
But he's durable as all heck. This is a guy who gets hit with pitches regularly. He's the only player in Japan who's gotten hit with pitches seven or more times a year and still managed to play 100-plus games and hit 300 every year.
Right.
Nobody does this. Nobody is consistently able to get hit and take that kind of pounding and play in the middle of the infield with a fairly good reputation and perform offensively. This guy can make adjustments. I think he'll make them in the U.S.
All right, next up, Kawasaki. Now, to me, his ability to get on base is huge, but I'm really not sure what he might be defensively. I don't really like his arm strength.
Right.
I think he's a guy who you would call hustle fast because he hustles and works so hard. He looks like he's going fast, but I'm really not sure that he is that fast. I'm not saying he's slow. I'm just saying he looks maybe a little bit faster than he actually is. He has decent wheels. He can steal bases for you, but I don't think he's going to manage to get on base at the same rate in the big leagues that he's gotten on base over here. So with his arm being suspect and his speed being suspect, I mean, what is he?
Well, his speed is not suspect. I think his speed is the real thing. He's as fast as Aoki is. Now his on base percentage to me is Lark. It's not in Aoki's range. Now what he does have going for him is something that I'll bet Bobby Valentine's here in Japan right now, and I would bet that if the Red Sox needed a guy on their bench who could play a defensive position, pinch run, pinch hit on certain occasions, and just be a spark plug, that Kawasaki might end up on the Red Sox.
Mm.
Because this is a guy who is, this guy has got guts coming out his ears. He's a leader. He's a team player. He's a dynamo. You want him on the team because of what he brings to the team more than his numbers. I'm not a big, you know, I'm not big on the intangibles, but this guy has been a leader his whole career at the Hawks, and I have no reason to think that he's not going to be a leader in the major leagues.
Well, yeah, it's going to be hard to be leading from the bench and leading
True.
As a pinch hitter and leading as a defensive replacement. But if anybody could do it, he'd be able to do it. I think if he can get over the language barrier. So we'll see.
Well,
what
he's a better player than Sho Taguchi was. Speaking of guys who picked up their level, who is a better, perhaps the only player who was a better player in America than he was in Japan was Sho Taguchi, and he was the same kind of player. He was an invaluable role player for the Cardinals for a number of years, and Kawasaki could do exactly that at perhaps a slightly higher level.
All right, well, good luck to him.
They might even play him in the outfield because he'll do anything.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will have to.
Right.
All right. Let's move along to the MVP talk now. The announcement is supposed to come on
Thursday,
the 1st of December. The likely choices and the obvious choices are what we're going to be discussing, not our choices. So, but, I mean, you know, you can basically figure it out. How do they go about choosing? I don't know. I think the media members, they count home runs, they count the RBIs, and they look at the batting average of cleanup batters and number three hitters. And that's about it. Anybody else, if you're a number five hitter, you really have to have an outstanding season. Otherwise, you know, I don't think you get that many votes. But that being said, one of our candidates is someone that you like, it seems, Shinosuke Abe.
Yeah, well, he's one of our candidates, and I'll go out and say it, that if he gets, I'll be surprised if he gets more than one vote in the MVP voting. I know for a fact he's going to get one.
Okay.
That if he gets more than one, it'll be an upset. And the reason he's not going to get any votes is because he fell just short of the number needed to put him on the ranked on the leaders for the batting average for the Central League. He had 437. Plate appearances this year, and you needed something like 446 or 447. I don't remember which.
Right.
Okay, now if he gets the 447, what you have a guy who's leading the Central League in OPS. He would be the leader in slugging percentage. He'd be the leader in on-base percentage. And he's the best catcher in the league. Okay, so what you have is a guy who's the best hitter in the league and the best catcher in the league. And that's a really hard combination. But the problem here in Japan is that the problem is that if you don't play for a pennant winner, if you don't play for the pennant winner, it's very hard to be an MVP.
Yeah.
We have had in the last 10 years about three MVPs who weren't with pennant winners. The most recent being Iwakuma.
And I understand that, and I, you know, if the voting is close, I'll tell you how I vote now. I'm going to vote for the guy whose team won.
Right.
You know, I don't, war right. is something good, but I want a guy who says, hey, you know, I'm going to put the team on my shoulders, and I'm going to be consistent throughout the season, and I'm going to produce, and we're going to win. And then they do. Okay. And that gets the extra points if it's close for me.
Well, my thing on this is that, you know, I think 100 years ago, that was the way to go, because we basically knew.
You say I'm archaic. In my thinking.
No, I'm saying that you're a classic.
Oh, hey, I like that.
You're a classic. You're
we are doing a fist bump now, guys.
You're old school. Okay, what I mean is that, you know, 100 years ago, what we had is who won the pennant, you know, who had the highest batting average. Now that was good enough because we didn't have that much information about the process involved in teams winning. You know, so there's basically two things. Now, if you choose your MVP based on who won the most games, on which team wins the pennant, you're choosing the MVP after the fact. The player could do, a player could do everything possible. Let's take an example of a game. A player can hit four home runs and make five great fielding plays, and his team could lose 10-7.
And he ends up not being a hero interview.
He ends up not being the hero interview. He'll be a story, but in the end, his team lost. Now, if we use that as a microcosm for the MVP voting, everything would have been in vain. And not only would everything have been in vain, everything would have been ignored because his team was not a winner.
Well, in that case, I want to disagree with you in the fact that if a guy has that great a season that is so much better than the other guys, I think it's going to be a stand. I mean, for me at least, and like I said...
Well, that's an extreme example.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's clearly above the other players,
sure.
I'm going to vote for him.
Sure.
If it's close, if it looks like it's a toss-up, I'm going to say, well, this team won, and that's where the actual win, the eventual
right.
winner for me is going to come from.
Is the after the anyway. Fact the team that actually did win, regardless of
but
the
I'm not ignoring
game.
The okay. other guys, and
I know
I'm
you
not
are.
Discounting
I know
the
you
other
are.
Guys, and I'm going to give them a number two vote or a number three vote and get them on.
I know.
Get them up
there. Yeah, I basically want to see the guy who does the most before the fact to help his team win, not the one who, in retrospect, team won, who then did the most, if that makes sense.
I'm not sure that it does, but, I mean, because it's not really after the fact. I mean, you are looking at the
right.
total
right.
for both players and the whole season for both players, so it's not after, you know.
Okay. Now, the other thing is, we have, is that the voters will tend to look at a very limited number of categories, basically batting average, RBIs. This is kind of silly too, because there's so many other things. There's also context. The same players' two players' numbers are not the same playing for different teams. I mean, they're not even the same sometimes playing in the same team because they might face different opponents. But that's more analysis than we can get into. But the whole point being that you really do need to look at all of that you have available to you. And sometimes I think people just make the easy choice. In Japan, the easy choice is, well, who was the pennant winner and who was the obvious candidate of the pennant winner.
I agree with that.
Now, the other thing that I want to complain about is the overwhelming choice of pitchers as MVPs. Now, we had this in the majors with Justin Verlander, and I think he was a very interesting choice as MVP. Now, did I think he was the MVP? I don't have a clue because I don't do much thinking. I don't think too hard about Major League Baseball. I have enough on my plate here in Japan.
Yeah, but, enough on your plate at home. Okay, but
but yes, okay. But the point being that it's an interesting choice. Can he make a big enough impact? Now, what you have to realize, and I think this is a big part of the recent research, is that once a pitcher lets go of the ball, it is out of his hands literally, and so much of what happens next is up to the batter and the fielders.
Right.
Now, okay, if the pitcher's striking out every batter he faces, yeah, then he gets 100% credit. Well, you know, 99% catcher, because 99% because the catcher's back there catching it. But most pitchers don't. Justin Verlander doesn't. Sometimes he catches a break with balls hit in play, and sometimes he doesn't. So there's a lot of chance effect in there, and so much of that chance is having a good defense behind you. I had an argument about Hiroki. We've had this, John and I had an argument about Hiroki.
Just 3 years ago.
I know, and
4 years ago,
Kawakami, and I said that, you know, everywhere I looked, now there are different kinds of pitchers, but everywhere I looked, if you compared you tried to remove as much of the context from their records, you know, the run support that Kuroda looked like he was getting because he was pitching in a high run environment, and the run support that Kawakami looked like he wasn't getting because he was pitching in a low run environment with their ERAs, when you took them out of those environments, it didn't look like these two were even similar pitchers. It looked like Kuroda looked like the Cy Young Award winner, and Kawakami looked like the guy who was getting the second and third place votes. It didn't really look close. That's not saying anything about what they did in the majors. That's a different issue. But the whole point is that context makes such a difference. And the pitchers can't get full credit for the defense. It's hard to be an MVP because you've got nine guys behind you. And the credit for their fielding has to go somewhere. And this is what the MVP voting misses 99% of the time, is paying any attention to what the guy is doing on defense.
Okay.
A catcher is worth a good catcher is worth an enormous amount to his team's defense. A good shortstop is worth an enormous amount to a winning team's defense. But he gets little or no credit for that in the MVP voting. And pitchers get 100% of the credit for however the balls fall, as batters do.
I do agree that pitchers get too much credit, and in a show coming to you soon, I will argue that, you know, wins and losses credited to the pitcher are frivolous and ridiculous, and ludicrous and all other kinds of words that ends with us. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, so I think that when you consider that some of the defense, some of the value has to go to the defense, then you get somebody who, by my best estimate, somebody like Shinosuke Abe, who's probably creating about, when he plays, fourth to a fifth of the Giants' defensive value. He's the best, he's perhaps the best catcher in the Central League, and he's this year was the best hitter in the Central League. And so what does he have to do to be MVP? Pitch out of the bullpen when he's not catching? Do somersaults? I don't know. So, okay, his team didn't finish first, but this guy is by far the best player in the Central League right now. He pitched, played cleanup for the Giants. But like I said, I doubt he'll get more than one vote.
Well, you know, and I heard you explain this to me the other day, and I'm like, okay, a fifth of the defense, okay, that's fine and good. And I remember when I was in high school, when I was growing up and playing baseball with some guys, I was really athletic. I had a really good first step. I could jump really high. I could run pretty fast. I was normal speed, you know, not the last guy, not the first guy. And but I couldn't play shortstop to save my life or the life of my family. And I couldn't get the ball and get myself in the position to throw the ball to first base for anything. And I, you know, a catcher, you know, I understood the way you explained it to me. It made sense that the catcher has, you know, accounts for all this with the defense. But you put a bad catcher on the field, not a bad catcher, an average catcher and an average shortstop. And I guarantee you, you will, the shortstop's errors and the shortstop's misplays and the shortstop's shortcomings will stand out far greater than the catchers. Although I know to put the game together, to actually have a game and make the game flow as you need it, you have to have a good catcher.
Right.
But I'm not going to overvalue all that stuff with a, you know, with a guy who's not as athletic and as important as a shortstop.
No.
But I understand.
No, I think there. I think the shortstops and catchers are more or less about the same. And,
yeah,
and the point being that the pool of talent, the guys who can actually catch, is so small that you have to give them credit for that ability to catch. And this has nothing to do with making errors. It means just catching every ball that they can.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, that's my argument for Shinosuke Abe, and I think we have to consider that. And also why I would almost never vote for a pitcher. Almost no pitchers are ever going to get MVP votes from me. Because I think pitchers shouldn't win, but because I think it's just hard to justify given how rarely they play.
Right.
Which leads us to a player who's a very interesting choice.
Well, the reason I have this in order, they're just in alphabetical order.
Yeah. Okay.
That's all. Next player is pitcher Takuya Asao from the Chunichi Dragons. And they're closing up here, so they're making a lot of noise. I hope you can bear with us here. He's a relief pitcher. He's a setup guy. But he had so much impact on so many games.
75?
He appeared in a club record 79, and this is a year after he appeared in a club record, I think it was 77 or 78, somewhere around there, in 2010. So he surpassed that mark. He had an incredible ERA of 0.41, a 7.2 record, 10 saves, allowed no home runs, struck out 100 in 87.1 innings, and just 4 earned runs. And I don't think anybody's really ever put together a season like that out of the bullpen at this level.
Yeah, so that's.
And I think he's going to garner some votes for it. I'm not sure.
I think he will too, because one of the things that, you know, I always bug John about, and it bugs me about a lot of the MVP voting, is you'll have a, and I'm not going to get into it here, but you can't say somebody's the MVP unless they're the MVP, unless they're the absolute most valuable player at their position. And I don't care what your team did.
Okay, okay. Well, that's where I disagree with
you. Okay, well, you disagree on this. But my point being, Asao, there's nobody who's better right now at his role than Asao is. So therefore, you have to consider him as an MVP candidate. I wouldn't, because he plays in a limited role. But I think he's an interesting candidate. I wouldn't vote for him, but I think he's an interesting candidate.
All right.
Some other candidates, real quickly.
Next up, Vladimir Balentin. I think because he led the league in home runs with 31, he was first in slugging percentage with 469, and second on OPP.
Yeah, yeah, he's a candidate.
He's a candidate, but his 131 strikeouts led the league, and he fell off so badly in the second half. I don't think he's.
Well, yeah, he had months where he was up. He was so up, it was unbelievable, and months where he couldn't hit a thing. So that's you don't really want to see that. But in the final result, that's not a big issue. Okay, we have Kazuhiro Takayama, another Swallows. Same kind of thing. He was a second in the league in home runs. Good for he was a great offensive contribution to the Swallows. Now the next is the guy who I think will win.
Yeah, and that's Kazuki Yoshimi of the Shinichi Dragons, and he tied for the league lead in wins with 18 and led in ERA, and he had the fewest losses with 3, so a winning percentage of 8.57. He was awesome. He was great, and I do also agree that he will win because, again, we look at the Japanese media, and they're just going to point at what an awesome season he had.
Right.
So,
and I want to mention a guy who has probably actually had a better season than Yoshimi. But again, we won't notice it because he'll probably get some votes because he won a lot. He won 18 games, as did Yoshimi. And he didn't have to vulture the last one like Yoshimi did.
Yikes.
But the point was, his ERA was so close to a guy who played with a good defense in Nagoya Dome, and his ERA was essentially the same, but playing with the Giants defense, which is not nearly as good, and playing in Tokyo Dome, which is not nearly as I think Utsumi's season was better. I think, to be honest, I think Yoshimi's a better pitcher, but I think Utsumi had a better season.
All right, and one honorable mention is probably going to go to Hisayoshi Chono, the Giants, who was the batting leader. So when we go to the Pacific League, and we're going to have to go quickly through these guys, but I think we're going to start again in alphabetical order, hopefully, or I got them mixed up here. Yu Darvish with the Fighters, and he had a career-high 276 innings pitched.
Right.
He was third in the league with wins with 18. And another thing that I found when I looked at his total innings pitched was that he never came out of a game in the middle of an inning. He finished every inning that he started the entire season.
I've
written them all the way across.
Wow,
all the way across.
Just
my
amazing.
Here, which is, I've never heard, a guy not being having to be yanked out of a game.
Yanked out of an inning.
An inning, I'm sorry. Well, I don't
he
think
never,
he's yanked out
so
of a game.
So he didn't leave a single base. He never left he never left the mound with a base without the third out and without a base runner. He didn't leave any runners for anybody else to pick up, which is pretty darn amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Darvish's season, because of the ball, were historically great, which is what you'd expect of a great pitcher in a pitcher's league and in a great pitcher's park with a good defense behind him. But that being said, I'm going to skip ahead to Masahiro Tanaka, who had, in my mind, a better season. He didn't have all those things going for him, yet he still managed to have the best ERA in Japan.
Second lowest in PL history, ever, 1.27.
Yeah. And this is, again, a pitcher's league, great pitcher's park. Not a great defense behind him. Not great offensive support. So a lot of pressure being in Tohoku this year. I think that all adds up to him being a better MVP candidate. And having a better year. Okay.
And then we have Takeya Nakamura, who I think is going to win the award.
Let's hope so.
I think they're going to get it right. He blasted a Japan-best 48 home runs in a dead ball season, 600 slugging percentage, 116 RBIs, led Japan in runs scored.
Right.
With 97. So, I think it was led Japan. With 97, he just had a monster season. He didn't drop off at all. In fact, I think he was just as good, maybe if not better. I don't think it was a career year, but very close to it. So he's probably going to win it, but we'll see if they get it right.
Yeah, I think they do get it right when not considering the defense doesn't matter.
Right.
When they get a hitter is so good is when it's so good that his defense is, and he plays a pretty good defense, and he's a surprisingly quick guy for as fat as he is.
Okay. He's not fat, he's just big bone.
Okay, that's correct. Some of the big bone is in the back. He hits a lot of hard things with it.
Then we have Seiichi Uchikawa, who went from the Yokohama Bay Stars to the Hawks and helped them win the Japan Series, and he was a batting champion. But they won a lot of games without him, and I think that's going to hurt his chances. That's just because they have a great team. I don't think he was an MVP guy, but he should be in the running. He'll probably get some third place votes.
He was the best player on the Hawks, without a doubt. Although I think the Pacific League, the number two vote getter in the Pacific League is going to be Wada. because he had the wins and he had the ERA.
Right.
He had a better year than Holton did. I mean, Holton had one more win, but Wada was the better pitcher.
Right. I think honorable mentions are going to go to Yoshio Itoi, perhaps, of the Fighters, and Nobuhiro Matsuda of the Hawks.
Yeah, Itoi was number two in OPS in the Pacific League. He plays in the toughest pitcher's park. He's also toughest pitcher's park. He's also a one of the better outfielders in the league. Matsuda is another one. He's a good fielder. He's an all-round player. He doesn't hit enormous numbers of home runs, but he hits lots of them. He's got speed. He hits triples. He steals bases. He hits doubles. He had enormous figures for somebody batting at the bottom of the lineup. 83 RBIs and 77 runs from a number 7 hitter, essentially.
Excellent production from down there. Yeah.
So that's what's going on. And we think, before we get to the listeners' questions, I think it's going to be Yoshimi and Nakamura. I wouldn't be surprised if Wada wins an MVP, though.
I hope it's not Wada, but I think Yoshimi's going to win it in the Central League, and I'm expecting the voters to get it right and get Takeya Nakamura.
Yeah, they do more often in the Pacific League for some reason. Yeah. I don't know why.
We're expecting it. We'll see on Thursday. We're not going to have a show the following week after the announcement, but if you hang on, we will have a show 2 weeks following this show. So let's get to fielding questions. All right, so we got one response from my buddy Claudio in Toronto.
And hey, Claudio.
Hey, buddy. Thank you very much. He sent in what he thinks are the MVPs. He says in the Central League, he picked Yoshimi of the Dragons. He said he was the most consistent player all year long on a Chunichi team that won a pennant thanks to its pitching, not to its defense, he says. Mm. And he also had the numbers. He led the CL in ERA and wins. He also considered Ballantyne. We're going to skip the other part of his response and go to the Pacific League, where he picked Nakamura Okawari-kun, and he said he agreed with Jim on the show of him having the numbers so far and beyond anybody else that you had to give him the prize. I also agree with you in the fact that I wouldn't have given it to him if Cebu had failed to qualify for the postseason, but since they made it in such a dramatic fashion, then the choice
you
is
there
clear.
Being John, because I'd give it to him whether they finished 4th, 5th, 6th, or 7th.
Right. Now he went on to ask us a question, which is, now that the Hawks have finally exercised their demons and reached and won the Japan Series again, do you think that the Pacific League will eliminate once and for all the controversial one-win advantage for the Climax Series second stage?
Well, the answer is no.
No.
Because
never.
Now they're tied up with the Central League, and they have to have the same system. The answer is I think Claudio, great question, because if you remember, a lot of people may remember that the reason they had this one-game advantage was because the Hawks couldn't win the second stage.
Couldn't ever get it done.
2004, 2005, 2006.
Floppity flop flop.
Yes, I know.
Boink.
Yeah, bring your bring the sabers, cut out your intestines, leave them on the field, harikiri, time's up. So they tried to do that to help the Hawks. It never helped them. But anyway, good question, very insightful question from Claudio. No, they're never going to change it. Well, yeah. They're not going to change it for the time being.
All I can say is, you know, when you get on the subway and you go to, you buy a ticket for a stop too far and you get off the stop before that and you ask for your money back, you never get it. And they've gone this far. I think they're not going to go backwards and reverse what they've done already with the playoff system. They've gone this far. I think they're only going to add to it. They're never going to subtract from it, I don't think.
Okay, listeners, if you understand that analogy, please write to the show at YakuJohn, YakuJohn@gmail.com, or any other questions you have. John will be answering my questions, I think, in the next few minutes.
Now, there's a new thing we want to do. We also want to invite you to send your comments and questions via MP3 file, so we can play them on the show. If you have an IC recorder or the latest version of Firefox, there's an online radio recorder up at the top of the Firefox toolbar that you can use, and you can easily make a record your question and send it to us. If neither of those work for you, there's a free software. It's called WavePad Sound Editor.
For PCs.
For PCs, and you can download it for free. And then you can send the questions. If you please keep them under 1 minute, we'll play it on the show. Give your name and address and present your issues, and we'll deal with them on the show.
We'll deal with you on the show. I love that. Okay, well, please join, and let's get to it with more baseball in 2 weeks.
All right, yeah, send in the computer in for repairs. Hopefully it will come back in a timely fashion.
And in one piece.
And in one piece, and hopefully we'll be out at another location somewhere here in Tokyo to a lot quieter location, hopefully.
Oh.
But you never know. You never know.
No, this is the greatest Starbucks in Tokyo. So if you're in Higashi Ginza, this is the place you ought to come.
All right, guys. Enjoy your off season.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.